You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to follow the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Just a reminder, if you hadn't checked out my episode from earlier this week, I had a snippet of an interview with Udonis Haslem in there. I know a lot of people have been talking about his role and whether or not he re-signs with his team. And, well, I wanted to give you a little bit of the insight from the OG himself. I talked to him back in May at the end of the, or right before the Miami playoffs began, and I asked him a couple questions about, you know, his role and his age, and of course a lot of the concerns from Heat fans about whether or not he still contributes. And I thought it was a very enlightening conversation. It wasn't a very long snippet that I included in Monday's episode, but definitely worth checking out. Today I'll be talking a little bit about, well, Miami's roster changes, whether or not they have a change to be made regarding Bam Adebayo. I'll be answering your questions. I'll be opening up the mailbag. But first, wanted to talk about Canada's most hated person, Goran Dragic. It was an eventful Monday afternoon for Goran, who was apparently interviewed by a Slovenian network at some point. He is there back in his home country of Slovenia. Half the Dallas Mavericks organization is there as well, as they make a big show about offering an extension to Luka Doncic. Dirk Nowitzki, special advisor to Mark Cuban, is there. Mark Cuban is there. Jason Kidd, the new head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. They're all there. They're got their pens and papers ready for Luka to sign on the dotted line. Not knowing, of course, that Luka will eventually make his way down to Miami just because he wants to be part of Heat culture. He'll learn from the best. But his countryman, Goran Dragic, is actually at the forefront of the news today because as he was being interviewed, I guess, in Slovenian, I have not confirmed whether or not this is accurately what he was said. It was attributed that what his response to a question was regarding the trade from Miami to Toronto. Toronto is not my preferred destination. I have higher ambitions, quote unquote. So, as you can imagine, Raptors Twitter, not too happy with Goran Dragic. They didn't like him much to begin with. And now, though they were starting to come around a little bit regarding Goran and what he can do and, you know, the fact that he was joining a Raptors team where he can contribute, especially as a sixth man. If you recall my interview, well, my conversation, rather, with Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors last week, we talked about Goran. I sung his praises as loudly as I possibly could, that I think he can still contribute. And by the end of the episode, Sean was coming around. I think he was already there before we even started talking. But, you know, he started to see a little bit more about how Goran could benefit the Raptors, how they could learn from him, and he was still a contributor. I had thought that he would join the Raptors at some point because Toronto did not seem willing to buy him out. But apparently, they could not come to any sort of agreement with Goran and his representatives. So it looks like they were planning on keeping him. But Goran doesn't seem too eager. A long tradition of players from other countries that don't want to play in Toronto for some reason. I'm not exactly sure what it is about Toronto. I know I've talked to Sean about it before, and we had mentioned how Alonzo Mourning, when he was traded from the New Jersey Nets at that point to the Toronto Raptors in the Vince Carter deal, he didn't want to play there. There have been others along the way who just don't want to have anything to do with the Raptors organization. I can't exactly offer insight. I think it's partly why Raptors fans are so defensive. If you recall what happened in 2010 regarding Miami and, of course, the rest of the world, how it was a very much an us versus them mentality. Toronto fans have always had that notion. They've always felt like it was them against the world, whether it was Canada just being generally disrespected and the sport itself not gaining any traction. The fact that people started slowly coming around to the idea of basketball as a sport in a very hockey prevalent society up there, obviously, I think that's pretty common knowledge. And so they've always had a long distrust, even with media down here. Whenever Zach Lowe talks about the Raptors, he's not talking about the Raptors enough, you know, or the national media doesn't schedule Raptors on Christmas Day games, even though Christmas Day games are a pain in the ass for players and they generally, by and large, hate them. Either way, the situation here with Goran is kind of ironic and somewhat laughable and sad also, because I would have liked for him to go to an ideal situation. The cherry on top of this really shitty Sunday is that he is being interviewed while wearing a culture shirt from the Miami Heat, the hashtag culture shirt. And so that is just chef's kiss right there. Amazing for him to be dissing Toronto while still representing the Heat, even though he was just traded from the Heat. Of course, I think he still loves this organization, still loves Spo and everybody on here. Watching, you know, Jimmy Butler talk about how close his relationship with Goran, that it was the hardest conversation he's ever had, having to talk to him after the trade. I think Jimmy is ecstatic about playing with his very close friend in Kyle Lowry, but he did not want to have to give up his other close friend in Goran Dragic. And I have a strong feeling that if Goran's able to play next season, he would strongly consider a return to the Miami Heat. I'm not sure how, what capacity, or for what kind of money or anything like that, but it just seems like he enjoys this too much. The next year will be a tough one for him because he probably cannot pull his family out of their schools and everything else. I don't think he can pull his two boys out of school and just uproot the family, which is something why, you know, long why I had always talked about Goran wanting to stay in Miami for as long as possible and wanting to retire here. Just didn't work out that way. Miami had an opportunity to make a move for Kyle Lowry, and they had to do it. And it just kind of puts Toronto in a really bad spot here because they, as my conversation with Sean revealed, it looked like they were trying to do Lowry a favor on his way out, that they were indebted to him, kind of showing some of that same loyalty that Miami has shown players that have succeeded here with the Heat for some time. They've always kind of, you know, done them a solid on the way out, if possible. And I think that was the case with Lowry as well, where they wanted to give in to this trade request and say, look, I want to sign with Miami. I'm going to sign here. I can go sign there just into their cap space, but you can also get something back if you complete the sign and trade. It helps them out. It helps me out. Helps you out too. And the Toronto Raptors said, sure. And then in exchange, they wound up taking back $20 million of Goran's salary with no intention of paying him. So it's kind of a perplexing situation there. Again, I understand that they were doing this to accommodate Kyle's request, but now they're kind of stuck here. So what seems likely is that they'll just continue to pay Goran. He is on the roster. That's just the case. The deal has been finalized. I mean, with the exception of whatever NBA machinations start taking place in between now and the next few weeks, where they discover that there was or wasn't tampering or any kind of illegal deadline chicanery or anything like that. That's just ridiculous. But as far as Goran, it looks like he's just pissed off all of Toronto. Again, they're very, very angry. They started talking smack about him, and they had a healthy distrust of him anyway. There's been a little video going around of him fighting DeMar DeRozan, you know, Chicago great DeMar DeRozan, and of course, he's even fought Kyle at one point. He's just a feisty guy. I thought he would be beloved there, to be honest with you, but, you know, my conversations with Sean over the years have always revealed that a lot of people don't like Goran, which is incredibly surprising to me. I know that he's physical. I know he can take the occasional shot. Maybe you get somewhat blinded by watching that player on the team that you cover, and even for you, the team that you follow and love. But yet, I just never really thought of Goran as dirty. I mean, I think he does whatever it takes to win, and that's the kind of player that you want to see playing regularly and contributing the way he has. So it's just an unfortunate situation there. And hopefully they can find some way to resolve it. I don't know what it's going to entail. I don't think they're going to just buy him out. Again, there's no intention of doing so. Goran would have to give up a significant amount of money. I don't see why he'd want to give up any money. He probably wants to join the Dallas Mavericks. Again, we're all basing this on somebody's translation. I'm not sure how accurate or inaccurate it might be. He might have said something completely different. There might be context loss in this conversation. Who knows? It's all very unusual, and maybe he has an intention of going to someplace that has a title hope. Maybe he wants to rejoin, Luka Doncic with the Dallas Mavericks. There's a million possibilities out there for Goran. It just doesn't seem likely that he'll be in a Raptors uniform anytime soon. He's pissed them all off. It's unfortunate, right? Because you want everybody like Gogi. You know, he's Goran Dragic. He's a dragon, you know? He inspired so many positive memories from this team over the years, and I just, it's sad to see that he's already burned some bridges with the Raptors fans there. They've been trashing him, but they've been trashing him pretty regularly over the last few years anyway, and now they had to accept it. You know, they weren't going to be happy with accepting Tyler Hero either. They don't like Tyler and his punchable face. They don't like Goran Dragic and his sour attitude, and now they had to watch as Miami somehow managed to pilfer Kyle Lowry from their roster. I don't know if I've got any actual insight here. I think Goran, you know, should, at 35, be able to determine exactly where he goes to. I think he wants to get paid. Totally reasonable on his part. Who knows what those negotiations have been like with Masai Ujiri? Maybe Masai's lowballing him to say, we'll give you one of those $15 million. We just heard amounts regarding Kemba Walker and his buyout from the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think he gave up $20 million, if I recall correctly, 10 point something in 1 year and then 9 point something in another year. That's a pretty healthy chunk of change there. That's what these players are talking about. Maybe you could always justify it as saying, oh, he's made a lot of money and everything else. Like, yeah, but yeah, nobody wants to give up $20 million. Goran doesn't want to give up $20 million. He wanted to get paid. And maybe if the team had decided not to pick up his option, he would have just become a free agent. Who knows what he would have been able to command on the open market? Probably not a whole heck of a lot. But the reality is that he signed a contract. He'll be playing somewhere and it'll get resolved at some point. We'll see how it all plays out. And of course, I'll bring you the latest once it does. But one thing you never have to worry about is the increasing prices of auto parts out there. I mean, it's getting very difficult to find the right parts that you're looking for at a price that you're willing to pay. But you never have to worry about that if you go to rockauto.com, because they're a family-owned business. They've been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Sometimes you can't even find the parts you're looking for if you go to a traditional chain storefront. Why bother going through all that process of them looking it up on their computer when you've got access to computers at home, which means you've got access to rockauto.com, a family-owned business, 20 years of service. You go to use their website. You can find everything you need very quickly, just a few clicks away. You have them shipped directly and safely to your door. No fuss, no muss. It's really easy. And again, great low prices that are available for everybody. So best of all, if you go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck. Then once you buy the things that you're looking for, you go to the how did you hear about it section and write the phrase locked on so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's rockauto.com. Wanted to get into a couple of listener questions. Why not? It's a fun time, kind of a little bit of a pause, right? We haven't gotten into the dog days of late August. Those are really the difficult ones where you're trying to find content and it's just there's not a lot going on. This season's a little unusual because it ended much later than the typical regular season or even playoffs, but you still have to find something to talk about regarding the Miami Heat because, well, Summer League is going on right now. I am not in Las Vegas, thankfully. It seems like not only is it hot. What's this annual tradition of reporters going to Las Vegas? Just to complain about the heat and how miserable it is and to watch subpar basketball. And, of course, there is also a pretty increasing health risk of traveling anywhere. But that's a whole conversation that I'm not willing to have on today's episode. Instead, I'll just be answering questions about Omer Yurtseven. Why not? Because this question comes in from our favorite yoga lady, Claudia, who writes in, so now that we have Dwayne Dedman and Omer Yurtseven to play center, does Bam move to the four after finding a three-point shot? Well, a lot to break down there, Claudia. First and foremost, Bam's luck with a three-point shot probably isn't very likely. I mean, look, he can shoot the ball. We know he can shoot the ball. We've seen him, but we've seen this from everybody. Something that a lot gets lost on so many players or same listeners, fans, and things of this sort is that everybody can shoot in the NBA. There's footage right now of Rajon Rondo and tall Rajon Rondo, Ben Simmons, knocking down threes as they train together, ironically or unironically. I'm not sure at this point. And just Ben Simmons does not shoot a three. He does not shoot anything in the NBA. And yet he's certainly capable of. These guys don't miss. This isn't like, you know, a guy that you played with or that you went to high school with. And maybe you say, oh, I can, you know, I can shoot the ball pretty well. And they're going to make maybe 5 out of every 10. Who knows? Guys in the NBA, they don't miss. If they're just practicing and playing around, they can all shoot the ball. Bam Adebayo can shoot the ball. He's not going to shoot the ball next year. I don't think he's going to get a three-point shot next year. And I think that's the bigger conversation here. Which isn't to say that he isn't going to be able to switch. Why? Because Yurtseven and Dedman both can shoot to three. Dedman, not so well. Yurtseven, a little bit better of a shooter. But we've seen Eric Spoelstra mix and match lineups. I think some people have been talking on Monday afternoon about how Miami's roster may be a little bit mismatched, not exactly the best fit here and there. I tend to disagree. I could see why they would want to make a change or two more in order to really strengthen this roster, strengthen the, not the core, but the fringes a little bit, because without Victor Oladipo being able to contribute until, who knows, February, it's possible that they'll be without a strong wing defender, scorer, guy who can go get a bucket for most of the season. And that's a difficult place. You don't want to rely so much on Kyle, on Jimmy Butler, on Bam. And Bam's not that guy. He's not the guy that you normally rely on to get your shot. Now, that's not to say that Bam can't take a leap, that guys like Tyler can't take a leap. We expect them to. You hope that they do. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they will. On paper, right now, in August, it's hard to say that Miami has that backup who can go get you a bucket, who can create offense for himself and others. Tyler seems like he fits the bill best, but it's around him, you don't have as much. You were relying on guys like Kendrick Nunn or Goran Dragic. None of them are on the roster now, obviously. So it leaves a little hole in Miami's overall strength and versatility, especially off the bench. I still think that they've made some significant improvements, and I do want to talk about a show that's going to come up over the next couple of days. I'm talking with Alex Salido of Five Reasons Sports, and he and I are going to be looking at the improvements of this roster and rating the players that came on board and whether or not there is, in fact, an improvement to this roster over what last year's players had. It's going to be a fun exercise. At least that's how I envision it in my head. Who knows? These things can always drastically change. But back to Claudia's question. Look, Bam's not going to shoot the three, more than likely. He's going to stretch the floor a little bit more. He talked about the midi. He talked about, you know, wanting to expand the mid-range game, have it be a much more frequent part of his repertoire. I could see that being the change that he'll make most likely, where it's just a reliable weapon and not, oh, I've been holding the ball for 5 seconds. Let me go ahead and shoot the 15-footer that I can knock down at 45 to 50%, because he can't. He's capable. He's got that kind of acumen as far as his ability to shoot the ball. Now, with Yurt 7, I think you have a legitimate floor spacing big, at least from what we've seen in summer league play and collegiately and in his limited professional experience. And I think that gives Miami some versatility there, the optionality to be able to say, you're our new Kelly Olynyk. Go out there and space the floor. And we've seen those lineups in the past. I think bringing Dwayne Dedman, that is, to play alongside Bam Adebayo, now that you have a full offseason of work and you're not throwing so much. Remember, they brought Dedman in really late in the season. He only played a handful of games, 16 total, including 4 playoff games. You were kind of rushing him there, and you couldn't really practice. It was the every other day game situation. There weren't days off, so you couldn't practice. You couldn't shoot around, things of that sort. Now you have a full offseason of work. I could see more of those versatile lineups where you have Dedman at the 5 and Bam at the 4. And look, you're going to give up some shooting here. So maybe those are lineups that you kind of bounce a little bit, where that's when Jimmy gets his rest. You take a non-shooter out of the lineup and perhaps bring in a guy like, I don't know, Max Strus to play alongside Duncan Robinson. That's now 2 subpar defenders. You can leave Kyle in there. You can stagger Kyle's minutes a little bit where he's making plays for Strus and others. You get another legitimate playmaker there. I guess you could put Tyler. The expectation is that Tyler's going to be able to stretch the floor. So maybe a lineup of, let's say, Lowry, Hero, Robinson, Bam, and Dedman. That's a good balance there. Then Kyle comes out, Bam comes out, and then you bring in Keith Morris or Tucker. You bring him back, another guy who can potentially stretch a floor back with Jimmy. That's the way to stagger the minutes. I could see lineups like that where, again, it's a Lowry, Hero, Robinson, Bam, Dedman, or Yurt 7. Yurt 7, like, it's fun to root for guys like this every year. This isn't Briante Weber, nor is it Patrick Beverley or anything like that. Who knows how impactful Yurt 7 could be. It's always a great pipe dream to have over the summer when, again, the dog days, when you don't know exactly what else to talk about. Oh, even as I'm reporting this, Luka Doncic has signed his extension. What a surprise. And I'm glad that they had the whole parade out there to make it seem like it was a much more important move than it actually is. Good for him. Now that just means that whatever team pays him next is going to have to foot the bill. But as far as Bam, I think it's going to work out. I think Yurt 7 can play. He put up some big numbers in a couple of summer league games in Sacramento. I don't know how much those translate. I love the overreactions of summer league. I know I come across somewhat curmudgeonly. That's an old-fashioned word. I know I can be a little cranky and crusty and whatever you want to call it. I've been around too long. I've been covering this game too long. I can't get hyped up for shit like this. I'd love to be able to say Summer League superstar Omer Yurtseven is going to be the league MVP next year. But, we know it can't happen that way. Guys, there are three guys in this roster, almost four with Duncan, making $20 million a year or more. You think Yurtseven's going to get any minutes? You think he's going to get any playing time to show what he can do? Nah, man, that ain't the way it work out in the league. That's just not how it's done. And so we all see these guys every August or July or whatever, and they put up big games in Summer League. I mean, Willie Reed, remember? Remember Summer League legend Willie Reed? I saw him in Orlando, and he had these big games, and everybody's like, oh, that shit, this is a guy. He's going to be playing center. This is before Hassan Whiteside. And, he was going to be playing center. He's going to be the guy who really stars and adds some dimension there. He was shooting from the mid-range. He was doing all this shit. This was before I want to say the three-point revolution hadn't really become as common as it is now. I don't think teams were jacking up 23s per game or anything like that. And unfortunately, Willie's no longer in the NBA. He does not have a role on any team, and, that's just the way it works. Every year it's like this. So pardon me for my somewhat crusty, limited view that's perhaps a little bit more balanced than everybody else's. You know what? Screw it. Yurtseven's going to star. He's going to start. He's going to be a superstar. He's going to be a great player in this NBA. And yes, Claudia, he's going to allow Bam to slide down to the four, and he's going to be the linchpin of an incredible defense there. This next question comes in from Sam Horner, who writes, not ironically, who are Miami's on the fringe players? What will be the deciding factor on who they keep? Oof. So it obviously can't be Yurtseven. Other than that, I don't know that there's any fringe players. It doesn't seem like the same kind of team in the past that maybe can afford to cut a player here or there. Look, there's always your two-way options. There's always the G League. I think the likely case would be Yurtseven. I think you can make a strong case for the guys in the Summer League roster. Defensive stalwart Marcus Garrett has shown out a little bit. He seems a guy that fits a need for Miami as far as a ball-hawking point guard, but his offensive game is so raw. He's so far behind. Can he carve out a role for himself in the league based just completely on defense? That seems a little unlikely. You still want to have some kind of playmaking, scoring, something. He does have a little bit of a floater game, whatever, but I just overall, there's not enough of that balance on one side or other. You want to have guys that can do it all. An impossible dream when you say it like that. And yeah, that's the reality. You look at a 6'9" player who can shoot the ball from 20 feet at this point, eventually maybe to 23 feet, can pass the ball, can bring the ball up court, etc. And yes, he becomes an all-star, all-NBA defensive player, and that's Bam Adebayo. That versatility is what everybody in the league is looking for. Garrett is elite as a defender, and yet the other side of the ball is such a glaring disparity that I don't know that he gets a lot of playing time. Other than that, I could see them potentially cutting guys like Morris if need be. You made a commitment to P.J. Tucker. You make a commitment to everybody else on this roster. I guess Gabe Vincent is somebody you can cut. Max Strus. Hey, look, right now you've signed him to long-term deals or short-term deals, a couple of years, but that's something. Those team options exist. We don't have those details yet regarding what they are. You can dig around and see if maybe they have it's been reported as far as what these deals are concerned, but I don't think that there's the same kind of fringe players that there have been in the past. There aren't, it doesn't feel like a Patrick Beverley or even a Willie Reed or somebody like that, where it's an on the fringe player and if they bring in somebody else on this roster, they have to make a cut. These guys are what they have. I think you can make a case for one more roster spot being left open for Udonis Haslem or X player if Udonis ultimately decides to retire. And whoever that player is probably going to be the on the fringe player. What will be the deciding factor? I think you want to be able to find these guys. They trust that Gabe Vincent's going to be able to find his role. They really like Max Strus and his shooting ability. I think they kind of see shades of Duncan in them, although there's not the same kind of similarities to their game. That they're both shooters in white kind of lumps them together, but there's differences in both their games there. And I think Duncan's better off ball. Strus has a little bit more athleticism and being able to cut to the hoop. He's not quite as long as Robinson either, so they're not quite the same player. And yet, I think they want to be able to develop those guys. And look, you have to have the commitment. If there's one fringe player, ultimate fringe player here, and it sucks to say, but I think everybody's finally starting to come around on something that I've been saying for over a year here. Casey Okpala, he's struggling. This is his third season, and his first season he couldn't quite make it to Summer League. Of course, there was the whole bubble. He's just been a G League player. He's been transitioning back and forth. He's had a full season now in the NBA with 72 games and still a difficult one, but he continues to struggle. I know he had flashes. He always has flashes. If there's one player that you could probably, and I hate to say this, but if there's one player that you could probably do without on the roster, it's likely KZ. He just doesn't seem to do anything well enough to justify his place on this roster. There's no emotional attachment. There's no I can still bust your ass like Udonis factor. There's no great defense. There's no great offense. There's just a guy who still doesn't always seem to get it. And I don't know if it's between the ears, although that would likely be the case because you see physically, he's quick, he's big, he's long. He's got all the tools physically that you'd think you'd want from a swingman, you know, a guy that can provide a lot of versatility and things of that sort because he can bring the ball up. He can shoot on occasion, but just doesn't ever seem to tie it all together. There are moments there where he has these flashes, and then they're offset by disappointing moments where he just looks lost out there. And so I just don't know what the future is for Casey Okpala. Maybe he can turn it around, but it doesn't seem likely that he'll be able to do that anytime soon. But, you know, that would be, I think, my choice for who the most likely fringe player is. So thank you for sending that question in, Sam. I'll try to get to a couple more of your questions in the next segment. But first, a reminder that BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing. You can track all the action at BetOnline, get all the latest news, odds, and info on all of your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball and the NBA, the NHL, the UFC, MMA, and WNBA, and so much more. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines. This is your chance to get into the games as teams prep for their runs into the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts, and don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON. Betting on the NBA doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get podcasts. Continuing this sort of quasi mailbag episode there. And this question comes in from the captain. It's safe to say the roster as currently constructed is expecting a big leap from at least one of Max Strus, Gabe Vincent, Tyler Hero. The captain asks, who do you think is the more likely to have a big year? Whew, there's a lot of nuance in there. And I think the easy answer and probably still the right answer is Hero. But I don't know how much of a leap he can take. One, my reasoning for that is that he is Tyler Hero. He's your first-round pick, your lottery pick. The ball is going to go his way. He's going to have the opportunity, again, on that second unit. Now with Kendrick gone, now with Goran gone, he seems the most likely to take over that second unit as your primary ball handler, shot creator, things of that sort. You can balance and stagger the minutes, like I said in the first segment, regarding Kyle Lowry, have him out there as your primary ball handler. But at 35... you don't want to keep relying on Kyle as your guy. That's a lot of wear and tear to put on that body as he continues to age. And so Tyler has to find a way to step up. Maybe you could see some lineups with Tyler and Gabe Vincent out there. Those don't sound great on paper, although Gabe at least offers a dimension of defense that Tyler does not yet at this point in his career. So Hero seems like the likely choice because the ball is going to be in his hands. He can create opportunities for himself. He has to be able to expand his game a little bit as a playmaker. But my bigger question is, like, what would you even consider the leap from Tyler Hero? Is it 20 points per game? Is it 40% shooting from three? Is it 5 assists per game? Where's the what's the barometer for what the big leap is for Tyler? Because again, I admit that you want that. You need somebody, as I mentioned before. If the core of your reserves is somewhat weakened right now because of the depleted roster, because of the trades and the changes that you've made, where is that offense coming from when your starters are out or facing injury? Is it Tyler? Is it Vincent? Is it Strus? Is it Vic Oladipo? Does he come back soon enough to make a contribution? That's a big X factor. You don't know. And so it should probably be Hero. But what constitutes the leap? Is it because he's making better plays as a playmaker? Is it because he's a more consistent knockdown shooter? Does he just show more understanding and balance to his game? All those things probably to some degree. As I've mentioned throughout the offseason, it seems like the tables have turned a little bit on Tyler. Like the fan reception of him was so overwhelmingly positive in year one, and he was the superstar, and he was so beloved, and as mentioned before, the American Airlines Arena crowd always seemed to love when Tyler was taking a shot. And now in second year, somehow the waters have been muddied. The well has been poisoned, and he's persona non grata. He's not as appreciated as he once was. And look, you know, the 75% chance of him being traded turned out to be zero, at least just yet. And given that, Miami has to make him the focus of what's happening moving forward. So he's going to make the biggest leap. He's going to get the most opportunities. I don't know if that translates into a quote-unquote leap, Captain. And what I'd like to see from him, and I'll leave it at that, is I'd like to see him be a more consistent playmaker. I'd like him to be a little bit better and efficient from three-point range. And given that, I think you could start to see a slight uptick in his overall efficiency and progress, and that would probably seem like a big leap. Other than that, from the other two players, like Gabe's going to have his chances, but I have yet to see him be able to tie it all consistent. Like we saw flashes when he was with the Nigerian national team in Olympic pool play. He seemed like he was, you know, able to knock down the ball a little bit. He came into Miami as a reported shooter, and that didn't quite work out over his year and a half with the team. You know, Strus has been a very good shooter. I think he shows a little bit more flashes. The reason why he probably would be my second guess as to who takes the quote-unquote leap is because he's got a readily available skill set that you can actually measure. If he's a three-point shooter and he can have, you know, hit 40% of his shots, unlimited opportunities, that's something you can go ahead and say he's made progress in. He contributes. He comes in off the bench, knocks down that shot. It's good to have an extra shooter on the bench. With Gabe, I don't think he's as consistent a shooter. His defense doesn't measure as well as easily, and so you can't exactly say he's taking a leap. If you had to guess what Gabe's reported impact would be in year one during the Orlando bubble year, or before. I mean, he joined the team right before the bubble. You know, again, came in as a shooter, had spent some time in the G League with Sioux Falls, had some big games as a scorer, comes to Miami, not really much of a scorer, has the occasional three-point shot, and then last season kind of evolves into more of this ball-hawking defender, although somewhat undersized and still capable of shooting the ball, but not hitting the shot as frequently as Heat fans would like. Then you look at what Max Strus is, and he's a three-point shooter who can, you know, again, knock that shot down. I just don't know what to expect from Vincent in year three. Does he go back to being a defender? Does he go back to being a scorer? Does he go back to being a combination of those two things? In Max's case, similar to what I was saying with Marcus Garrett, you know, it's an elite skill that you can see. Now with Garrett, you know, again, you can't really measure those defensive impacts unless you say, you know, he's got a steal per game or, you know, a block per game, or you can see him attacking the ball handler and things of that sort. With Vincent, we saw that as well. And yet, I don't know, he just doesn't seem likely to take a leap. Maybe that's not the answer you're looking for. It's a very difficult one to answer because I don't even know how these rotations will play out. I don't know how the changes will take place. We're going to see improved versions, I think, of all these players. I think we're going to see Strus more comfortable in his role. He's gotten paid now. He's on a two-year deal. That seems like he's found his place now with Miami, and they like him enough to have made that offer. And if that's the case, I think he's going to find a way to make an impact. Given all that, I also think that Tyler's going to have more opportunity. He's the guy. He has to be. He's a lottery pick. You don't trade him. You didn't trade him. And now you're not quote-unquote stuck with him, but you do have to give him an opportunity to thrive. This is his chance. This is year three for Tyler, and he has to be able to show consistent growth. I mean, just like if we can say that with Casey Okpala, that he hasn't shown that, you also want to see much more consistent growth from Tyler. And look, Tyler is being judged much more negatively than Casey Okpala, and yet I don't think there's any doubt that Tyler's had much more impactful games. The fact that one was a first-round pick in the lottery and the other one was a one that you had to sacrifice a couple second-round picks in order to acquire in the second round, notwithstanding, they're both in year three. I don't see why one gets a pass and the other doesn't. You know, I think there's bigger hopes that if Miami makes that leap to acquire Okpala, maybe they found some flashes there, a diamond in the rough, but they just haven't been able to uncover that one. So I'm not sure what happens with Tyler in year three, but he does have to be able to prove something. There has to be some growth. And given that, and given the reputation and the reception from Heat fans this summer, I wonder whether or not they'll start to say, okay, now he's a little bit more efficient. Once he's on the final roster, maybe they can finally just accept that he's going to be there and, I don't know, find some way to appreciate him again. It's been a weird offseason for Tyler, and I know I've talked about it at other points during the offseason, but just the fact that everybody has turned on him so quickly does not make any sense, and that there has never been any kind of real inclination from the front office that they're looking to trade him, and it doesn't seem like there's been any kind of public distancing from the team. They included him in their junior NBA or junior league summer camp. You know, they can't trot him out to the 10-year-old kids and say, oh, you like Tyler, huh? Well, he's gone. I think that just goes against generally when you include a player in those kinds of activities. I know that's part of their contract and everything else, but yeah, he's been doing the work. Like, I don't think he's just at a point where he can't do enough to earn the respect or to get back in the good graces of fans that have suddenly and strangely turned on him. But anyway, that's enough for now. I don't need to defend Tyler anymore. He's going to have to prove it or not, and we'll see whether or not he is capable of making that leap. There were other questions that I could have gotten to, but I did not have the time, unfortunately. But just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Be sure to please follow the show and leave a review. Special thanks to all of our sponsors, and special thanks most of all to you. This is David Ermil signing off for now.